Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show. I'm Manoush Zomorodi, the host of WNYC's New Tech City, sitting in for Brian. Thanks so much for having me again. On today's show, a new explanation for why some people really don't need that much sleep, the tech sector and its women problem, and how being straight has changed in our post-closeted culture, plus finding some peace and quiet in a noisy open plan office, and New York Magazine's approval matrix, you know, that graph on the back page, well, it's going to come to the screen. Editor Adam Moss will be here. But first,
Rikers Island is a broken institution for adolescents. And a broken institution will produce broken people, especially when they are young and fragile with mental illness, as so many of them are.
That was U.S. Attorney Preet Bharara speaking yesterday as he presented a 79-page report on abuses against adolescent inmates held at Rikers Island, an environment he compared to Lord of the Flies. The New York Times described the report from the federal government as, quote, an extraordinary rebuke of the New York City Department of Correction. It comes a few weeks after a Times investigation into a similar pattern of abuse against mentally ill inmates at Rikers. And Michael Schwartz, who worked on that investigation and has looked closely at this new Department of Justice report, joins me now in the studio. Hi, Michael. Welcome back to WNYC.
Good morning.
So tell us about this report from the U.S. attorney. What prompted the investigation? And what period of time does it cover?
What Mr. Bharara said yesterday, what prompted the investigation were a series of reports of violence going on, specifically in the youth jail. There had been a number of lawsuits over the years. There had been a number of cases that came out in the media, particularly involving correction officers directing other inmates to enforce a kind of corporal discipline within the jails, for which several had been charged. So the Department of Justice about 2.5 years ago launched this investigation, seemingly very, very thorough investigation of the violence inside the jail, and came up with these damning conclusions.
I mean, really, really, really damning. Listeners, if you haven't read the report or read Michael Schwartz's article in the New York Times today, you really should. It's really extremely upsetting. The report details violations of constitutional rights from repeated beatings, especially of the head and faces of these 16 to 18-year-old inmates, to excessive use of solitary confinement for nonviolent offenses, even some instances of dragging inmates to areas not covered by video cameras in order to beat them. Can you give us an example from this report?
Well, one of the more astounding things that I saw, and one of the things that did surprise me, was that they found inmates, and these are, you know, between the ages of 16 and 18 years old, who actually would prefer to be in solitary confinement because they felt it was offered them more protection against these sort of.
So being in solitary confinement was better than being out in the open.
Correct. That's what the report found. And given all of the, you know, findings about how harsh and brutal solitary confinement is, that really is an astounding finding that they would discover these things. You know, you had inmates. There were nearly a dozen examples, specific examples detailed in the report. You had inmates, four of them, who were beaten by multiple guards for several minutes with broomsticks, batons, and radios. You had one inmate who complained that he was raped by a correction officer and then was told not to bring the subject up when investigators interviewed him. So some pretty powerful situations going on there in the jail.
Yeah. So listeners, we can definitely take your calls on this if you have a personal story that can add to this reporting. If you work on Rikers or you've been held there, especially as an adolescent, tell us about that. And guards, we have taken your calls on this before. What's happening from your perspective? It's 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And we've even taken calls from Rikers before. So the phone lines are definitely open for your personal stories to add to this conversation, and others in the criminal justice system too. Defenders, prosecutors, social workers, the phone lines are open. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. 1-800-522-4592. And Michael, it's always worth pointing out when we talk about Rikers that many of the people being held there are awaiting trial. They have Correct. Not been found guilty of a crime. Is that true about adolescents as well?
That is true about adolescents. There are some sentenced adolescents, like there are some sentenced inmates in the adult populations, but the vast majority are there awaiting sentence. Either they haven't made bail or they haven't been given bail, and so they're waiting there in the midst of their trial proceedings.
So you were on the show just last month talking about your long-term investigation into the treatment of mentally ill people held at Rikers. And there are several points of overlap between your investigation and this Department of Justice report. In this population of adolescents at Rikers, this is astounding to me, about 51% received a mental illness diagnosis. That's compared with about 38% of the overall population. So what is going on in the bigger picture with these adolescents at Rikers? Why are so many of them, over half, diagnosed with mental illness? Why is that rate so much higher for these younger inmates?
I don't know if it's exactly clear why the rate is so much higher for young people. Studies have shown that, in fact, young people develop – people who are in this age group, 16 to 18 years old, do tend to develop mental illness, symptoms of mental illness while they're in confinement. And many of these individuals, as this report pointed out, have been sent to solitary confinement for various infractions, including nonviolent infractions, and have spent many, many months in solitary confinement. And this has been shown to contribute to mental illness. And I'm not exactly sure of the statistics here, how many of the inmates who are at Rikers Island came in with mental illness versus those who had developed symptoms of it going along. But it is, you know, as the numbers show, there are many more adolescents with mental illness in the jails than in the regular population. And this has been increasing year by year for about the last 8 to 10 years.
And they are getting psychiatric treatment while they are on Rikers, right?
They're getting some psychiatric treatment, though it's debatable. It's not even much of a debate that the psychiatric treatment is less effective than what they might be getting in some sort of a hospital situation, because there, as this report points out, the violence is so intense that it undermines a lot of whatever counseling and treatment they might receive.
And I mentioned that problem of the video cameras at Rikers, how the DOJ report found that some beatings took place in areas that the cameras didn't cover. It's also estimated that 30% of important video footage was missing. What does that tell you about how guards are handling these cases?
I mean, it just shows that they're aware that they're doing something wrong, and they're also aware that they can get away with it as long as there's not absolutely glaring evidence that that this is something that occurred. Oftentimes, when it comes down to a disciplinary proceeding and a situation does occur in which an inmate suffers injuries, it's the inmate's word against the correction officers. And time and again, and as this report shows and points out, the investigative agencies that are active both within the jails and outside side with the corrections officers. There's a bias towards there.
Yeah, I mean, there's even one example in the report of this officer who had been involved in 76 uses of force over a six-year period, and yet he'd only been disciplined on one occasion.
Correct. And that's one of the things that I found most interesting about the report is that the investigators really signaled out the investigative agencies, and there are several that operate on Rikers Island investigating these things. But really, as a whole, describing the investigative process there is almost useless.
Let's go to a call. We've got Michael in Brooklyn on the line. Hi, Michael. You're on WNYC.
Yeah, how are you doing today? So as I was saying before, this is not specific to adolescents, but this is just something that I witnessed back in 2006. I was on Rikers Island for about 3 weeks. I was subsequently placed in a house that was designated for the blood gangs. I have no affiliation with gangs whatsoever. It just so happened I was put into this house. One of the guys that was in the house happened to be a Crip, which is sort of like a rival gang member to the Bloods. And for 2 days straight, they beat this kid up. He requested to go to social services. Upon his return back to the housing unit, he refused to go in, knowing what was waiting for him. And the guards literally lifted him up by his arms and his feet and threw him back into this housing unit to be beat up again. And then finally, the Bloods just kind of took a stance and said, okay, there's nothing we can do. Like, we're not going to beat this kid up. But it was a situation that resonated with me for the short time that I was on Rikers, just to see, like, the animal-like treatment that some of these prisoners deal with.
And, Michael, how did you sort of cope with being there and being surrounded with this?
Funny enough, when I first got put into this house, it was absolute insanity for me. I'm like a small town kid. I was actually in college when I got put in there. I got caught up in some drug use. And I was gay at the time, and I just had to sort of put on this persona of I'm not gay. And there were a lot of suspects that I was, and I ended up just telling them I'm in college and I like fashion, and they called me fashion, and I have to admit that I've seen much worse experiences with people, and I've talked to people who've just kind of been in and out of Rikers Island their whole lives, and for me, it wasn't that bad. The Bloods actually kind of took a protection over me. They didn't let anyone mess with me. They didn't let anyone sort of, like, steal my food out of my cantina, as you would call it. But seeing this kid who is a really, really small, like, boy, probably 21 at the most, to get beat, I would, like, just run to the back of the room and kind of hide. I was raised pacifist, so it's not something that I wanted to witness. But to watch the guards, like, as he's, like, fighting the guards not to go back in, to literally lift him up off the ground and throw him into the housing unit as though, no, like, it's like throwing a lamb to wolves.
Michael, thank you.
Just really sad and disturbing.
Thank you so much for calling in. You know, Michael brings up an important point there, that it's not just abuses by guards against inmates. In the report, there were 845 reported fights between inmates last year. What does the report say about those incidences? What starts those altercations, and what can or should the staff do to stop them? Because they're often put in the middle.
Well, in fact, you know, the report comes down pretty strongly on the guards anyway, even in cases where it's inmate on inmate fights. The report blames the guards and the administration at the jails for not creating the proper environment where those situations can be addressed. The report, and this is backed up by a lot of the interviews that we've been conducting on among inmates and civilian staff, that you know, guards will in fact sometimes intentionally provoke fights or will allow them to go on without intervening. And the guards will also tell you, and there's some truth to this, that you know, to a great degree, sometimes these fights get out of control, and they, you know,
sure,
once they erupt, have a very difficult time getting them under control.
And need to do it physically. And that leads me to ask, what does the Correction Officers Union say about this latest report?
The Correction Officer President, Norman Seabrook, had a pretty benign response to it, saying, in fact, that he welcomed some of the reforms that the report suggested the Department of Correction adopt, though he did, you know, he did defend his officers' right to use force when necessary to quell a dangerous situation. And there are guidelines that govern whether and when correction officers can use force. Force at times has been deemed to be an appropriate tool for quelling some types of
disturbances. You can have guidelines for anything, right?
Exactly. And as the report points out, the very, very frequently these guidelines are not followed. Very frequently, correction officers will respond immediately with violence, immediately with any, you know, to any altercation with a punch to the face, even if it's a nonviolent altercation.
Let's go to Jean in Brooklyn. Hi, Jean. This is Manoush here. You're on WNYC.
Hi. I wanted to make a comment. I'm a brain injury advocate, and there was a study that came out this February in the Journal of Adolescent Health that said that about 50% of teens being admitted to entering jail in New York City have a history of traumatic brain injury. Traumatic brain injury actually, you know, is first of all not a mental health issue. It's an injury to the brain, and the symptoms, you know, involve impulsive behavior, slow processing, and some kind of emotional dysregulation. These patients are not being treated correctly. They're not being treated. Treatment for traumatic brain injury is a really very difficult problem in our country. It does exist. But this study was, I've been talking to our congresspeople about this for a number of years, and finally this study came out this January that shows that. And, you know, I would say that if those people who are, you know, the teens that are entering the system or other people who are entering the system were actually being treated for traumatic brain injury instead of being re-traumatized, not allowed to heal, and re-injured, there would be a huge change in criminal justice in New York City and the rest of the country.
Jean, thank you so much. So Jean brings up a good point that this is a population that's already probably not under the best circumstances, growing up under the best circumstances, and yet, and I think what strikes me so much about this is we're talking 16 to 18-year-olds. Some of these people may not have even gone through puberty yet. These are growing bodies, growing brains. And yet, among the 70 recommendations in this report, it's that there needs to be better reporting practices, better discipline against the guards, and also it sounds like more training, because it sounds like they're only getting about 38 and a half hours of training in an academy to deal with mental illness. I'm not sure what other training they get as well. Is this really, does this come down to inadequate training or inadequate ways of dealing with a very specific population?
Well, the department is under the new commissioner, Joseph Pont, who came in, took office in April, has addressed this issue and has allocated funds for more training for mental health for its correction officers at the academy. But really what a lot of this comes down to, and what this report shows and what our investigation was able to uncover a bit, is that jail is just a really poor place to receive treatment. You have a very, very violent environment. Not only are the are your fellow inmates violent, but as you can see here, the people who are supposed to be keeping control of the situation are also violent themselves. It is not a place where anybody is going to seek is going to obtain any sort of treatment for a problem, mental or otherwise, or rehabilitation. Exactly.
What is different for adolescents at Rikers than for the general population? If you are 16 to 18 years old in New York State, you're going to be charged as an adult here, but these teens are put in a separate facility from grown-ups. Does it make any difference in how they're treated?
It clearly doesn't make any difference in how they're treated. And in fact, these reports, this report and reports, you know, that have come out previously indicate that, in fact, it's more violent for them. They are recipients of the brunt of the violence, particularly those suffering from mental illnesses. Though this report also notes that you know, the focus was on the juvenile facilities at the jail, and they acknowledge that perhaps this problem also extends to the other jails on Rikers Island.
Let's go to another call. We have Prince on the line in Newark, New Jersey. Hi, Prince. You're on WNYC.
How you doing, Winoosh?
Good, thanks. What's going on? You want to tell us about your experience, Prince?
Okay. Rikers Island, first of all, between the adult and the adolescent, it's the same guards. And they rotate the guards around so that they can't become personable with the prisoner. Now, from the highest levels, they encourage the guards to aggravate the prisoners so that they'll fight with each other rather than fight with the guards. And now they call themselves the bowl, and so it's always this adversarial quality to it. And they use the shakedowns at 5 o'clock in the morning as a means of keeping prisoners in check. And they use it as a means of revenge, you could say. If an inmate insulted a guard, they would have a shakedown. And they tell you right off that's why they're doing it.
Huh. Prince, thank you so much for calling from Newark. So it sounds like Prince is speaking from firsthand experience. As far as you know, are they the same guards that are in the adolescent unit and the adult unit?
There is a degree of rotation, yes. In fact, a lot of the inmates that you talk to, they say just that. They prefer it when they have what's called a steady, somebody who they know, somebody who works in the facility, because there is a relationship that develops between the inmates and the guards if they're allowed to interact with one another. And one of the suggestions in the report is that there should be more interaction between specially trained correction officers and the adolescent inmates, that could go a long way to solving some of the problems there. But yeah, as it stands now, many guards frequently rotate in and out, and so you'll have guards who were assigned to a juvenile facility at one point, and then they're moved out, and new ones are moved in.
So let's go to John in Westchester. Hi, John. It's Manoush here. You're on WNYC.
Hi. There's 2 points I wanted to make. Is the one thing that the report didn't mention is that age group, the 16 to 18-year-old age group on Rikers, is statistically going to be a more violent group than the older inmates. To be 16 to 18 years old and actually get sentenced to Rikers, it's not for a nonviolent crime. It's not for a drug sale. You would have to have some level of violence for maybe first-time offenders for the most part. And to actually get sentenced out there for that, you would have to have done something that is violent. So the majority of 16 to 18-year-olds on Rikers are going to be more violent than the older inmates that are out there.
But just to be clear, John, most of them have not been sentenced yet. You can just be charged with something.
I'm sorry. They've been arrested for a violent crime. Rikers is not a prison. It's while you're waiting to be sentenced or waiting to go to trial. But they're out there for violent crimes. To have a 16 to 18-year-old in the criminal justice system in New York get sent to Rikers without bail, or a high bail that they can't make, it's not for a nonviolent crime. It's for a shooting. It's for a felony assault. It's for a weapons possession charge. I mean, these are inmates out there that are more violent per capita than the older inmates. The older inmates may be out there for less nonviolent crimes, prostitution, drug sales, theft. But for a 16 to 18-year-old to get sent by a judge to Rikers, they have to have done something that is pretty violent in the first place. And the second issue I have is, we run into a problem when corrections officers, specifically the law enforcement officers, are tasked with a job that's not their job. Corrections officers are not social workers, and they shouldn't be confused with social workers. Their job is to keep order in the jail. The underlying social issues need to be addressed, but I think we run a serious risk when we try to make a law enforcement officer, like a corrections officer, something that they're not.
John, thank you so much in Westchester. So, you know, John makes an interesting point, Michael, that we're asking these guards to do something that it's just not their job. And in fact, there are many recommendations in this report. And one of the big ones is that these adolescents should be removed from Rikers and housed at a Department of Corrections jail instead. So pretty much just suggesting that Rikers is too dangerous for these kids and beyond hope for reform in the short term, and that there needs to be another solution. Does that surprise you?
No. I mean, the Correction Officers Union, they're very strong on this point, that the jail population has changed to such an extent that the officers, your typical officer, no longer has the training and expertise necessary to control them, to deliver the types of services they need. Norman Seabrook, again, the president, has said time and again that his officers are not social workers. They're not trained to be psychiatrists or therapists, which – you know, many of these studies, like this report, have found that some of these inmates could benefit from. So you know, I think that's true. That the training is not there for these officers to be providing counseling for every one of these inmates. And the report also points out that yes, this is one of the more difficult populations on Rikers Island. 2/3 of them are on Rikers Island for felony charges, which is much more than the overall adult population.
So just to wrap up, Michael, yesterday's report gives the city 49 days to respond with reforms. One day down, 48 days left to go. What happens next?
Well, I think the U.S. Attorney's Office and the city, including the Department of Correction Commissioner, are going to sit down and they're going to decide how to move forward on these recommendations, what can and cannot be done. I mean, it's going to take a long, long time. It's going to take much longer than 49 days to be able to reform some of the problems that are happening at Rikers Island. And Mr. Barrera, the U.S. Attorney, has said that he's optimistic that the Department of Corrections is willing to dig deep and impose some of the reforms that they're recommending.
It sounds like we actually might be getting a call from Rikers. So just as we wait to see if that comes through, I do want to ask you, reports of abuse are down under the new DOC commissioner. Is that correct? From, I think it was 39 in April to 19 in June.
In the juvenile facility,
In the juvenile facility. What have been the changes under the commissioner, Joseph Pont?
Well, as the report recommends, they've expanded and are expanding the number of cameras that are available in there. They're trying to improve the training of officers. They're trying to they've created these working groups to try and figure out ways to address the problem. Pont was brought in as a reformer. He was appointed in April, or he was appointed earlier in the year, took office in April to specifically tackle these problems at Rikers Island.
So let's go right now to a call from Rikers Island. Anonymous is on the line. Hello there. You're on WNYC.
Hello. How are you?
Good, thank you. Tell us about your situation.
Well, I was in the four building, which is the building that houses the teenagers. It's half teenagers and half adults. They're just now trying to change that and make it all teenagers and then people over 50. But the problem is that the COs, you know, they're not trained, as everyone has said, and the kids can get unruly, and it's peer pressure. And what I will say is that the COs are very good about not keeping the kids separate from the adults, because they always say, you know, one of these kids could turn around and just stab you. You know, they're kids, and they're in a box, and where they're put is terrible, and they're constantly screamed at all day long. You know, it's negative energy in these kids' heads all day long, screaming, 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 you're bad, you're bad, you're bad. So eventually they just believe they're bad, and then they just act out.
Tell us about why you're on Rikers. Are you there? Are you awaiting?
I'm in a trial. I'm in the midst of a trial.
Okay. And are people on Rikers aware of these reports that we've been talking about?
No, no one talks about it. I mean, I listen to your station every day. No, they're not aware. They don't even, most people don't even know what NPR or WNYC is here.
And in terms of reforms, what would you like to see happen?
Well, to educate them more, you know, to see these kids learn how to grow up, you know, not to grow up in a prison, but to grow up in a way that they're aware of what outside of crime is. You know, they live in a bubble, and their bubble is prison, the streets, survival. And they don't know enough about how to get out of that bubble. So I would want them to be more aware of the world, whether it's math or whether it's politics or whether it's anything. Some of it will seep in, and some of those kids will get help, and some of them will, you know, get out of that bubble, whether it's 10% or 1%, at least someone's saved. But most of them, as your guest said, they get out and they just come back and it becomes, as they say, career criminals.
Can you say, I don't know how long you've been on Rikers right now, but have you noticed any changes at this point since the department has been kind of toting reforms that they've been trying to get online? Have you noticed anything new?
Well, since the commissioner came into office, the four building that houses the teenagers was being painted. They were superficially cleaning it up, painted, cleaning the floors, you know, all that kind of stuff, because if a reporter or somebody comes in, they want it to look good. The other thing is they've been shipping all the inmates that aren't teenagers out. You know, there's certain buildings, like a four building, a three building, a six building, and the four building is what houses the teenagers. So they've been moving all the adults to other buildings, which has caused problems there because it's called what they call an overload. So there's too many people in other buildings. So the one thing I do know they're implementing is that to maybe with the excess room to train the kids more. I don't know what their plan is about getting the adults out, but you know, they're kids and they all wear brown uniforms, so there's no sort of peer pressure in terms of fashion. You know, they try to just keep them the same.
We can't thank you enough for calling in from Rikers. Call again, okay, Anonymous?
Okay.
Keep us updated. Thank you so much. So we're going to leave it there with Michael Schwartz of the New York Times, who's been covering a pattern of abuse at Rikers Island, including this latest report from the Department of Justice. extremely unsettling. Thank you so much for being here, Michael.
Thank you.
Coming up next, if you are one of those people who thrive on just 4 hours of sleep a night, well, guess what? It turns out there might be a gene for that. Stay with us.